Welcome to episode 151 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we read Formerly Known as the Justice League by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. And now, the cast begins.
You're such an angry typer.
I'm not. It's just loud.
Ticka-ticka-ticka-dunk-dunk.
It's not even a loud keyboard. I was going to make that claim, but it's a laptop keyboard.
Yeah, is there such a thing as a loud laptop keyboard?
No.
I miss those, like, clicky-clack IBM keyboards from way back in the day. There's, like, a huge aftermarket for those now. They cost, like, hundreds of dollars on eBay.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because they don't make them anymore, and it's, like, you can buy new ones, but they're, like, such a niche kind of thing that nobody buys them.
How do you spell it?
Oh, that's right.
That is?
Yeah.
I feel like that's really not right. Okay.
Two Z's. I need some swim trunks like Booster has in this. Maybe that could be my costume for Comic-Con next year. Just the Booster Gold swim trunks. With the star right over the crotch. That would go over great, right?
Mm-hmm. I think you'd have to explain that to a lot of people.
No. That's the best part. It's just fucking going with it. You guys ready?
Yes.
Welcome to another boastful episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
Jen.
Hey.
I want to apologize for not being on the air. Is that how you would say it for a podcast? I want to apologize for not being on the air last week, because shit got busy for us, and life, and all that kind of good stuff. And aside from that, you know, we could just excuse ourselves and say that we took a 1 week break after our 150th episode. I didn't realize that the Justice League International episode was our 150th. It's almost like I planned it. It would be. That's how I would have planned it. Do my favorite comic on a momentous episode number, but no, it was just complete fucking happenstance. So that's why we took a week off. Not that, you know, we were busy and didn't have anything ready to go for you guys to listen to. That's why. This week, for episode 151, we read Formerly Known as the Justice League, written by the same team that did Justice League International way back in the 80s. That's J.M. DeMatteis and Keith Giffen, with pencils by Kevin Maguire. And ink in this one is Joe Rubenstein, but I don't know if that's who did the ink in the old ones. I don't recall.
I don't remember either.
But anyway, this is the glorious reunion of members of that past team. And that team evolves over time, and we get members in this that we didn't see in Volume 1 last week. But there's some of the core group in this that was in that, mostly Boostel. Is there anybody else in this that was in the first trade last week?
Max.
Yeah.
Yeah, Max Lore, that's true.
Aside from him, don't think so.
Well, yeah, Mary Marvel steps in to replace Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Right, which is fine, because he did not have a good experience, and he definitely did not want to be back on the team.
I think in Volume 2, it adds Fire and Ice. Well, we don't get Ice in here, but...
Oh, Fire and Ice. They're such a good duo, too. Do we get Ice next week? Yes, we do, with Guy Gardner. Oh, yeah. Next week's going to be a good one, too. And you know who we get in this? We get Ralph and Sue. This is like the first time we see Ralph where we're not fucking depressed.
That's true.
Which is great. So this getting the gang back together was a feat all in itself. What do you guys think of this idea of like revisiting these heroes in their not post-heroic years, but like obviously their latter years? They had their glory days, and now they're kind of just coasting as far as heroics go.
Yeah, a lot of them are. Well, Beetle and Booster are definitely retired, and so is Fire. She doesn't seem to be actively superheroic.
Yeah, and I think Elongated Man is just like a team player, and without a team, it's just fucking movie nights.
Yeah. His life got pretty sad, it seems.
Well,
not sad, but...
He's boring, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah,
no, I know.
He's bored.
Yes, I 100% understand what this man's life is like. 100%. Because it's like, it's not that he's unhappy spending every night at home with his wife. Right? He's perfectly happy doing that.
Slippery slope, Andy.
No. But like, honestly, if it's just you and your wife doing a movie night every night, it's like, after a week or two, you're like, can we like go out and watch a movie? You know, like, or just go out and have dinner instead of having dinner and a movie at home. Like, they're in that sort of repetitive rut, I think. And I think they've both been in it so long, and they're kind of going out. They're going out and doing something. It isn't like going out to a jazz club or going out to a bar or going out to dinner and drinks with friends. They're going out is like going out and being a superhero. So for them, it's like, yes, please, we want reason to be out of the house. Not slippery slope. Everybody does that.
It was really fun that Sue was like, yes, please, you know, restart the league. Because you could tell she felt the same way.
Yeah.
And part of it, with her, it seemed also more like it was she was kind of fed up with Ralph getting stir crazy. But you can tell she enjoys being in on the action.
Yeah. And you get a sense, I get a sense Ralph is the kind of guy who has like 20 or 30 really good jokes that he likes to tell all the time. And if it's just them hanging out together, I don't even want to imagine how many times she has heard those jokes. But at least if she's out with somebody else, like Beatriz, they can like riff on him. Or Sue can play the valiant wife and stand up and defend his stupid joke that she's heard 100 times. But either way, those are not something she gets to do if they're just hanging out at home. But I do think my favorite story for what they've been doing in the meantime is Booster Gold.
Yes.
My absolute favorite. Because, like I said last time, in the 80s, his Booster Gold Enterprises was highly successful. This superhero with sponsorships was a great idea back then. But in, like, 2003, 2000, and through the 90s, hell no. He got totally washed up in the 90s. He went extreme, and it was all terrible. And then he got to be lame, and nobody wanted to sponsor him. So how does he maintain his lifestyle? Fucking marry a rich old woman.
He's now a kept man.
That's right. And I love that he is completely shameless about it. He does not care. He doesn't try to hide it. He doesn't even try to pretend that he actually loves her or cares about their relationship. He's like, no, I did this for the money. Why else would I do it?
It's so what his character is, too. Like, I feel with Ted Kord, you know, he's like, oh, I have a heart condition and I'm old. And you know that's not really Ted, but you know that what Booster is doing is really Booster.
Yes. That's a wonderful way to put it. Because Ted's fighting it, and it's one of those things where he knows he shouldn't because he has a heart condition, but he's like not willing to admit to himself that all he needs to be is egged on just a little bit, and it's like he's digging for a compliment kind of a thing, but like, please, please encourage me just a little bit to go out and play superhero. That's all I need. Please do that. Please. No, no, I have a heart condition. No, no, I can't. Okay, fine, I'll go. Like, that's the trick he's playing. Even though he adamantly says no about a half dozen times to Max.
So, a question about what happened between Booster and Ted. Because it seems like they had an actual falling out. I think, as Ted put it, it's like Booster's treating it like a breakup almost. So, what negatively impacted their bromance in such a way?
I don't know that was ever one singular event. I think it is a lot of what Ted is saying, is that Ted was always a slightly more mature one, but as they grew up, that gap kind of widened, and Booster is unabashedly Booster. And like you say, he hasn't changed almost at all since the 80s. But Ted has grown up, become a more mature person. He's taken his life more seriously. He realizes that being a superhero was something he did when he was younger. He has a heart condition now. He's got Kord Enterprises to run. he has shit to do, and he can't go gallivanting around all the fucking time because he has shit to do. And I think that that gap just kind of grew, and they kind of just fell apart. And I don't think there was an event that happened, but it seems like they both have some animosity toward each other over that lack of staying in touch. Like, Booster maybe thinks he got all high and mighty and just didn't want to hang out with him anymore. And I don't know what Ted's problem would be, that he just wanted to distance himself from Booster's immaturity.
Hmm.
But it's all obviously right. Better for both of them that they're together again.
They just got to work out a couple issues.
Yes. So what did... Jen, is there... the one thing I was worried about with this is that this is really... very much a reunion comic. They get the gang back together and remember this guy, remember this guy, remember this. It's sort of a like the VH1 show. What is it called? Where Are They Now? It's totally, that's this is Captain Adams' Where Are They Now, because I don't think he was in a book for like a decade before this, and if he was, I don't fucking remember it. Well, no, I think he was in Justice Society. That might or might not be right. I don't know. But either way, this is a Where Are They Now for half of this team, at least. And so it's like, that's neat for people who knew them in their heyday. But, I mean, Jen, did you know who Captain Atom was before this?
Yes, because I swear we've seen him.
Well, he's in Justice League Unlimited, the TV show.
Yeah. Well, I think we, in the past 150 episodes, we've read one or two things that had him not as like a main character, but you know, as a bit player.
Okay.
I mean, I at least like knew the name and the uniform. Interestingly, it was actually Fire that I knew nothing about. Mm. I knew Fire and Ice. Like, I knew they had been on the league, but that was about it.
Okay. And at this point, Ice is dead, I should say.
Oh, that's depressing.
Yes, it's incredibly depressing. Ice is dead right now, but Fire has found a way to go on with her life as a faux porn star. So how was that for you then as an introduction to her character?
I thought that, you know, after reading the whole trade, it was pretty representative of her personality. She's not, you know, someone who... She's in, like, no way a bad person, because I think we're supposed to see that she's doing these, like, sexually illicit things and be like, oh, she's bad. But in reality, she's actually wearing clothing, so it's supposed to be like, oh, she's bad, but it's tempered with she's really good. And we see that in her behavior, too. Like, she kind of acts mean, and she calls herself a bitch several times. But she seems like a pretty nice person. Like, she actually... tries to help her teammates and do things. So she was pretty cool. I liked her. And I liked that... I thought she was, like, a really good foil to Mary Marvel.
Oh, God, yes. Because if anybody could be more candy-coated than Billy Batson, than Captain Marvel, it would be Mary.
Freaking hate those people. Like,
just... Aww.
They give me the diabetes.
Like, aw, that's... They're not that bad.
It's like drinking corn syrup.
See, in Justice... Okay, in JLI, I would totally agree with you for the most part, except for how he senses that he's not a fit for the team, so he needs to leave. He takes that initiative. But here, I like it even more because the authors take her complete innocence and play off of it by sexualizing her and then reminding everybody, no, 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 she's 16. You're not supposed to sexualize her, but we're going to sexualize her. But she's candy-coated, so you know she really is. Like, it's just, I love the way that they kind of dick with the other characters using her. And using that kind of candy-coated veneer.
It's so weird, though, that she's 16, but she's not drawn like a lot of the 16-year-olds. Like,
well, she's not supposed to. The Marvels, they turn into adults when they say Shazam.
Well, that's the thing. When we first see her talking to Billy, and she looks so young, like, is she 16 there? Or does she turn into 16, a 16-year-old? No, okay.
She is 16 before she says Shazam, and then when she says Shazam, just like Billy Batson, it's kind of like that ambiguous mid-30s, really...
Like late 20s.
Yeah, yeah, late 20s. Kind of.
She looks young still, but when she is in her... you know, normal human form. She does not look like the other 16-year-olds in the DC universe.
I do believe she's Billy Batson's older sister.
Okay. She just looks... They draw her really young. And I think they draw all the Marvel family to look really outside of their age.
And then, who else did you not know before this? Did you know Sue very much before this?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've read several things with her in it that weren't just dark and sad.
That weren't just her corpse? I don't know if we have.
Read things where she's dead. I think that's the only time we've read stuff with
her. Okay, then maybe on my own I've read things with her.
We read 52, and we read, I don't remember what it's called. The one where Jean Loring kills her.
Infinite Crisis? No.
No, it's
Identity Crisis.
Identity Crisis. Yeah.
So many crises.
Well, I've seen her do cutesy detective stuff with Ralph before, so maybe it was outside of our podcast, but she's not new to me, she's just not someone I'm super familiar with.
I do love her characterization here. I think it's perfect in that she is the person who has no powers, isn't even like the no powers going out to fight like a Hawkeye or a Black Widow, but the no powers hang out at base and just kind of make sure everything stays operational and together. Like Max, as soon as they all get transported away, Max just loses his shit in panic. And she's the only one who keeps her calm. Even, you could say, after transporting, the only reason they keep their calm is because they've been drugged. She just keeps her calm because she's like, oh, shit, like this happens like every other fucking day with the Justice League. Don't you all know?
Yeah, it's totally old hat to her. And you can tell that she's... It's not just that she's calm. She's, like, excited to be doing something productive. You know, she chats on and on about this database and, you know, how Ralph Googled himself and, you know, like, yes. Couldn't stop looking himself up. And it's just really funny because it shows that it's not just that she's helpful, but she's also, like, really into being part of the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, someone I've actually not really seen before, but I have heard much about is Nort.
Oh, yeah.
What is up with Nort?
Well, he's pretty much just in Justice League International, and then in Green Lantern a little bit also, right?
Yes. Because he is a Green Lantern. Well, he's not here, but he was. I don't know how he gets here.
He was captured by Magna Khan.
Apparently. Wait, is it Magna or Manga?
I don't know.
I kept reading it Manga.
I think it's Manga Khan.
Oh, must be.
Because I was like, is this a reference to a thing? I don't know.
I think I was just calling it MagnaCon in my head.
Oh, yeah, it is MangaCon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Job's done. Sorry, this is... I don't know. But yeah, he's a really lame Green Lantern. Like, there are some lame Green Lanterns, there are some okay Green Lanterns, there are just kind of do-your-daily-job Green Lanterns. He's actually... a really lame Green Lantern.
Well, he's supposed to be. I mean, a lot of the lame Green Lanterns are just accidentally lame. But he's supposed to be, like, the butt of the jokes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And he is in this as well.
the Jar Jar Binks.
Merchandise will not speak.
He also has, like, the wackiest name. It's not... just Nort. It's like Nort Esplanade Nismyasher or something.
Oh, yeah, his whole name.
It's like, what even?
But there are a ton of lanterns that are like that, too. Like, there's the fly lantern named Buzzed. B-Z-Z-Z-T.
Oh, he hangs out with Mogo, right?
Yeah, they're partners. Yeah.
Chip?
Yeah, and Chip. Chip, the chipmunk.
Isn't there another squirrel, too, that also has a...
I don't know. I know Chip and Nort were partners. Partners. Yeah. God, I love the 80s.
Oh, God. And then they mentioned his arch nemesis, the Scarlet Skier.
Yeah.
I don't know what feelings I'm supposed to have about this character.
Well, it's like, I think if you read Justice League International and you didn't get from that comic that these guys are B-listers, read this and you will get a sense of just how B-list it gets. And you get it not just from the villains they face or the fact that you don't know who the fuck they are or how ridiculous they are. You get it from the fact that, like, the other people in this universe are embarrassed to be associated with them. Just utterly embarrassed. Like, when John Jones shows up, the guy almost never shows any emotion. But he is visibly embarrassed. And he's so embarrassed to the point that fucking Batman can't help but egg him on. Batman is cracking jokes at him. It's that bad. Like, that's how terrible these people are. So, like, the Scarlet Skier thing makes me laugh a bit too, but really, that's probably about the best Nort could do. He's probably proud of the Scarlet Skier. Probably even have an arch nemesis at all. I mean, I don't have an arch nemesis. Well, I guess I do. It's probably my boss. I think that's most people, though.
I just... It's so sad, too, because they're like, okay, go be Justice League Antarctica. Because, you know, Antarctica really needs a Justice League. All those injustices that need to be fixed.
It's just... A lot of penguin crime.
penguin on penguin hate crime. Mm-hmm. And polar bears thinking they're top of the hill. Motherfuckers.
Yeah, polar bears.
They're in the Arctic?
In Antarctica.
Oh. Well then.
Yep.
Sorry.
So the only guy we haven't covered yet is Maxwell Lord. Do you have the same problem in this gen that you had last week? Looking at him and not being able to scream evil, evil, evil?
No, he's so incompetent. He's just... Like, last week it really seemed like he had something going on, like scheming or bad, you know, evil. This week he just seemed bumbling. I didn't get the horrible sense of he's a bad man when I read about him or saw him on the page. You know, he seems like you guys described last week, like a used car salesman. I can see him in like this ugly mustard plaid suit, like sitting around and trying to sell, you know, JLI merchandise. And it's just, it's actually like so overwhelming in this comic that it takes over any knowledge of what else he's done.
All right, good. But I will say, so, you know, you call him bumbling and incompetent, and, you know, he definitely comes off that way, but at the end of the day, he still does get the team together, and he still does get the operation up and running. So it might all just be a put-on.
I don't know. I feel like it's more serendipity than administration that got them through at the end. Because, I mean, if you look at it, Ted was the one who had the idea to call Oracle so that they could Star Labs could save Captain Atom. And it was really Sue Dibney's bargaining that got rid of Manga Khan. And, I mean, holding him hostage and having that idea. And then, you know, the Justice League came in and they beat up some of the robots to save everyone. So I kind of feel like it may have worked out, but I don't know how much of Maxwell Lord's hand was actually in that.
Yeah, I don't know, but I think about the beginning and he knew what order to get them in. He knew who to send to get whom. Like, he didn't just happen, you know. It wasn't... None of that was just serendipitous mistake. That was planned. And executed correctly. To the point that it actually worked. Like, the fact that he even got a whole team back together for this idea. I think that's... I don't know if I want to call that bumbling.
I think he's definitely smarter than he looks. And I think maybe what his problem is that he is so, like, arrogant and narcissistic that it creates a block. He creates a problem for himself. You know, yeah. He, like Andy said, he did orchestrate the team getting together. And he has some level of business acumen, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is, I think he gets in his own way. And so he needs people like Elrond and Sue Dibny to help him succeed.
Yeah, Elrond to put him back in his place every once in a while.
Yeah.
I love that Elrond starts out calling him O Glorious Leader, and by the end is the one putting him back in his place most often.
Yeah, he calls him something like your extreme incompetentness.
Yes, I do believe yeah. That is pretty close.
I think Elrond is part of the reason I feel like Maxwell Lord's incompetent in this, because he doesn't get respect. And I know that he never really got respect because he put together the JLI and it's hard to get respect for that. But just having the people directly under him constantly insulting him, this time around it felt more, I don't know, like, not like he was one of them that they were just joking with, but like they actually, you know, had doubts. I don't know. He just seemed a lot less threatening than he did last week.
Yeah, I will agree with that, because I think like last time, there was a big hurdle that he had to overcome. The Justice League had broken up. Darkseid had defeated them more or less, and there was this widespread distrust of the metahuman community, especially when they clumped up in groups. So the fact that he was able to get a Justice League back together, up and running, and get them a UN sanction, and to get multiple branches of the Justice League in different countries around the world, like, that was a major achievement that did garner him a bunch of respect. But then when things like Justice League Antarctica started to come around, they were like, okay, this guy's actually just a fucking fool. Right? Like, this guy's, he's not doing this because he's a genius. He's not doing this because he wants to make the world better. He's doing this because he wants to exploit the branding of Justice League. And he wants to exploit it to that degree. And that's not genius. That's not anything. That's just being a really good car salesman, basically. And so I think at that point is when he lost the respect, and that any of these guys stopped not giving him the time of day, but just stopped treating him with whatever respect they did have for him. It just evaporated. Speaking of evaporated respect, what about the villains in this? What about Manga Khan? I'm just going to go straight to the big one at the end, because I think he's the least interesting.
Yeah, what the hell was... Oh, go on.
I was just saying, it's pretty funny. I thought that whole part was pretty entertaining, but yeah, there wasn't much consequence or anything to it. It was funny the way it ended, like the final page of the book where it turns out that he just wanted him back because he loved him.
Yeah. Because he had a crush on Elrond.
What the hell was that? It was, I mean, it was, like, really funny, but it threw me off guard, like, so much. I expected something, like, villainous. Like, him, it sounded like he wanted vengeance.
Well, the only, he was just, I think, it's not that he wanted, well, I think, obviously, we're meant to think that, but it turns, he's not really, he's only a villain in that he is an antagonist to the Justice League.
Yes.
He's not a villain because he's trying to do villainous things. But we don't know that until after the negotiations end. And he does threaten to blow up the Earth.
He is a conqueror. He is a supreme lord of the cluster or something like that. And he was a fearsome villain back in the day, but he's not coming back here for any of that. The thing is, he is a bad guy, but that's not what's motivating him right now. It's like if Darkseid came back to Earth because turns out he has a crush on Wonder Woman and wants to woo her.
Yeah.
Like, the second he shows up, they're going to start beating his ass. They don't care why. They're just like, oh shit, Darkseid's here, let's fucking fight. they're not going to bother to take the time and figure out. And he's going to show up and say, give me Wonder Woman. Right? And they're going to be like, fuck no, dude. They're not going to realize that he's there for love. Right? And that's basically what Manga Khan does here. He just shows up and says, give me Elrond. Who the fuck knows why he wants Elrond?
It was great, though. Just... It was surprising, and it was actually really nice that they didn't stick to the standard trope, which I think would have made him a really flavorless villain in this. But it was almost like... It was a good punchline.
Yeah. But because there was a slow build-up to him, too. That is, page one is his point of view, and yeah. There's a couple other times where we come back into him zoning in and zooming into Earth.
Yeah. And it almost seemed like there was going to be some sort of, like, epic battle with aliens. But then it's... he was really funny in this, actually. Like, if you consider, he allowed Sue Dibney to convince him that he was a hostage.
Yeah.
When he probably had the upper hand. And he was just like, okay. And he also has some sort of disorder that makes him soliloquize.
Yes, that was really cool. I did like that. That was funny.
And it was just such a different way to handle the looming space alien plotting something evil trope that I really enjoyed his inclusion in this comic, even though it was a pretty minor role.
Yeah. I appreciate him showing up mostly just because he brings an army of robots with him, which means that the actual Justice League shows up. And I love the interplay between them and the Super Buddies. Just in that, you get the Justice League, right? We mentioned this before, how they all look down and are embarrassed by their association with these guys. And that's all well and funny, but what I find most entertaining is that these guys want nothing to do with the Justice League anymore. They want as little to do with John and Wonder Woman and Batman as Wonder Woman and John and Batman want to do with them. Right? Like, didn't Beatriz call Wonder Woman a bitch?
Yes.
Yeah, like a couple times in one panel.
Right? And it's like, well, yeah, she's fucking, like, what is this all, this Amazon, Wonder, Warrior, Woman thing, togetherness? No, you're fucking pretentious, coming down here talking down to us. Fuck you!
What's funny, too, is the very last line Wonder Woman has is wondering why they don't like her.
Yeah.
So she doesn't really want to be on the team with them, but she feels like they need to be looking up to her.
Yeah.
Which they do not at all.
She feels like she's owed that for some reason. And this is like 2 pages after we see fucking Mary Marvel rip through, just like walk through one of the robots.
Yeah. She's the only one that actually punches out one of the robots. Well, and Booster. The only thing Flash does is steal their guns.
Yeah.
And see, Flash just seems to be having fun with all of this. He doesn't hate them, but he doesn't know them, right?
Well, he has a thing with fire. He has some bad background.
Wally does have background with a lot of these guys. Wally fits in with this group. He really does. He's not nearly... I think this comic benefits by this Flash being Wally and not Barry. Barry would be on the Wonder Woman side of the fence, whereas Wally is clearly on the Super Buddy side of the fence. Wally is one of these guys. Barry takes himself way too seriously for this shit.
Yeah, for sure.
But I love that we get that other angle, too. That just, like... It's like... Upper management comes down and decides, oh, you all should be looking up to us because of this, that, and the other thing, whereas all the blue-collar people are like, what the fuck are you doing? You all are assholes.
I don't know. I only get that from Wonder Woman. John just is like, get me out of here. I'm done with these people. And Batman.
Oh, Batman was so great in this.
Yeah, he just is like prodding John.
Batman, like, under his cape is seriously just pointing and laughing the whole time.
Yeah, but you can't see it because it's all shadow.
Yeah.
He's so used to putting on that dark facade that it's so awkward when a joke comes out of that, like, shadow of cape.
Yeah, everybody's like, what the hell's going on here? The other heroes are thoroughly confused.
I really love that Batman came down to visit just so that he could spend some time mocking these guys.
Yeah, that's the only. He didn't come there to help at all. He didn't.
No, definitely not.
And I think because he also knows that they don't need his help. Sure, this team is not even as good as the old Justice League International was when Batman was on it. This team is less than that, but they could handle Maga Khan, fucking Mary Marvel, and Captain. Well, Captain Adam's not there for this fight, I guess.
I think Batman definitely has some respect for them as heroes, but he knows. Because he was on a team with them, right? And they did get the job done in a very roundabout way. And so I think Batman has some love for them, at least more so than John does.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I don't know what the point I was trying to make with that was. I feel like, I guess what I'm trying to say is each of the different JLA members is there for a different reason, and Batman's isn't necessarily. I think Batman's mostly making fun of John, and not so much the JLI guys, the super buddies.
Yeah, yeah, I don't entirely agree.
I think it's kind of Batman's thing to, you know, show derision, and like, Wonder Woman is really nice to people she considers her peers or the citizens she's saving, but she's, like, clearly not cool to these guys. Whereas, I think because Batman's kind of a dick to everybody, it makes him seem nicer in this instance.
Yeah, because he's supposed to be nice to anybody. The fact that he's even cracking jokes about them shows a certain level of affability that is completely out of character for Batman. That's sort of the wink that lets you know that he not only cares about these people genuinely, but, like David said, respects them a little bit too. Even just a little bit.
Yeah, it's not a lot, but it's definitely there.
Yeah.
Because I think he knows that at the same, maybe they're not as effective as Batman is, but they're all there to do the same thing, right? I mean, Batman's primary motivation is to stop crime, and that's what these guys are doing, even though they're not quite as good at it as Batman is.
Yeah.
And so I think Batman, being the upstanding citizen that he is, has to respect that on some level.
So let's work backwards through the story then. What did you guys think of Roulette and the house?
I don't think I'd ever seen Roulette before this. Is she a common villain? Like, does she fight them a lot?
I don't know if she fights them a lot, but I've seen her come up in different things, and she's in the Justice League cartoon, for example, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's just one of those, like, villains that can kind of, I think, participate with any of the other heroes.
Yeah, she has her shtick. She runs this gambling house, and everybody kind of interacts back and forth one way or another. And the house always moves around, too. The house doesn't always stay in one place.
Is she like the daughter of the original Mr. Terrific or something?
You know, I actually don't know their relationship, which bugs me because I like JSA so much that I'm relatively familiar with the Terrifics, and I've read almost all this Justice League International stuff, and I don't know their relationship. I don't know if I'm just stupid and forgot or what.
I googled it really quick, and so Roulette's grandmother was also called Roulette, and she was an enemy of. She ran in a casino, and she was a villain of the JSA Mr. Terrific. Well, the original Mr. Terrific. They're both in JLA.
Okay.
I just thought it was weird that she was like, when she decided that she had to be fair, she was like looking at this picture of Terry Sloan.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's a little bit weird. But I do like that. This gives you. This team, their biggest villain is never going to be the people they're facing. It's going to be themselves. And this makes it literal. Right? Like, the biggest villain when Manga Khan shows up is not Manga Khan. The biggest villain is themselves and their own composure. And the fact that they lose it and Booster punches them. And here, their biggest villain isn't these other people. It's each other in the literal way, but also in the sense of, like, they can't overcome the mind control drug. Their villain is their lack of willpower, per se.
Yeah, and Oh, go on, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, it just plays on that theme we've been seeing throughout, like, the early part of the comic where, you know, there's a lot of incompetence and apathy. Everyone's saying, like, they don't know what they're doing. They're going to muck it up and get us all killed. Like, the neighborhood people who come. And there's general apathy to even form the team. Like, Ted doesn't want to deal with it. He's got other shit on his mind. And, I mean, Booster's enthusiastic, but Captain Atom was kind of, like, on the fence. So, and I think Fire was on the fence a little bit, too. Because she had her own thing going. So, it's not like they necessarily even feel a drive to be heroes, and that really manifests here. They're just kind of like, I'd rather go do what's comfortable instead of doing the right thing, which is something we never really see superheroes engage in.
Yes.
Well, that was very, very well put. I don't really have much to add to
it. Yeah, I can't follow that up. I cannot follow that up.
I won that point.
Correct, you did. I think this also... I think for people who read this who aren't familiar with some of these characters, this gives you an idea of, in the most base sense, what everybody's kind of power level is, and the fact that Mary Marvel is clearly on top by a mile.
Well, she's like close to Superman power levels. I mean,
yeah, isn't that what the commercial says? Not quite Supergirl, but close.
Well, yeah. She's basically Billy Batson, right? So
yeah, her power set is identical to Captain Marvel. In terms of strength, what is it? Okay, hold on. Mary Marvel, not quite Supergirl, but close.
That commercial was pretty excellent.
Fire, yes. Hot, hot, hot. Need we say more? Captain Atom, the fallout-free living nuclear reactor. That's great PR.
Well, Blue Beetle and Booster Gold, a heterodynamic duo for the new millennium.
Gotta say hetero.
Yes.
Well, that comes up in the one we're going to read for next week, right?
Yeah. All I can say is do not look on Tumblr for Blue Beetle and Booster Gold.
Yeah, go.
Don't. Just don't. Stay away from DeviantArt. Stay away from Tumblr. Do not do a Google image search. Go to our Tumblr, and we have been posting things that are not of the non-hetero variety.
No slash fic here. No, that's a good thing. If there is one thing that Jen does not care for on the internet, it is like the weird, creepy slash fic that people put up on DeviantArt. And I think that too, you know, we've seen gay couples in comics, and like that's good to have in there, but the thing that Booster and Ted have is a bromance, and it's a sacred bromance, and you can't mess with that.
Yeah, like, I always wonder,
don't dig with it.
I always wonder what's wrong with just a genuine friendship between two people of the same gender. Like, why does it always have to get slash-ficked?
Internet.
I don't understand. Like, can't two guys just be friends?
Not on the internet.
Not on the internet.
Nope.
Anyway, the other thing I wanted to say, aside from the power levels and stuff, I appreciate the fight scene with Fire and Mary Marvel, in that it shows Fire that Mary Marvel has all of that in her. Mary Marvel knows those words. Mary Marvel knows how to be a fucking crazy murderous bitch. Mary Marvel does know these things. Like, that word, like, the cussing that she does, that's not from the drug. That's in her head somewhere. And I think that side comes out after the fight. Fire gets some respect. Like, Fire respects Mary Marvel a little bit more and realizes that sugar-coated exterior is very practiced, very on purpose, and probably requires a lot of work to keep up. It's kind of that thing where, again, I'm going to bring up the Office comparison. There's that person that you work with that is just fucking happy all the time, and it's like, it is Monday, it is 7:30 a.m., would you fucking be bitter about this like everybody else on the planet instead of happy to be here? like, could you just please? But then you realize that is on purpose, and that person is putting forth a lot of effort to make things nicer for everyone. And I think Fire, after this fight, realizes that Mary is doing that she's trying really hard to stay positive. And I think there's an earlier example that like the commercial is a great example. You see in the top frame everybody frowning when the commercial's over, and Mary Marvel is frowning with them. Like, she obviously didn't enjoy it, or at least she's frowning. Her gut reaction is a frown. And then everybody starts to bitch on it and complain and knock it down, and then she's the one who says, I loved it! Like, I don't know that she genuinely loved it. I don't believe that she did. Otherwise, she wouldn't have been frowning. I think she's doing that on purpose, like, hey guys, it's not that bad, right? Huh? Yeah, cool, everybody smile! And I think this fight that we get in the house shows that, it shows you that side is there, and that this really is practiced, and that she's trying really hard to be a good person. She just wants everybody to be happy.
And I think, too, Fire starts treating her a lot better at the end, right? Like, she stops mocking her for being... such a Pollyanna, really, right?
Yeah. Doesn't she offer to, like, go and watch Disney movies or some shit with her?
She tries to do that to talk her out of being a...
being a murderess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Savage.
But she does take her out to dinner. She says, we need to... It's just something about having a... Oh, some food and girl talk.
Oh, yeah. I would love to see that conversation. Because Fire's version of girl talk is so different from Mary's.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so let's work a little bit further backwards. And did either of you guys remember the name that those Harvard hooligans had?
Yes, I found it.
You did?
Yes.
What did they call themselves?
They are called the E Street Bloodsuckers.
That is not an appropriate name for them.
It's actually in their flyer. They don't actually say it. It's just on the flyer that they hand out.
They're my favorite villain in this.
Yes.
My absolute favorite.
I'm not quite sure what their power was, but... they were very well spoken.
But yeah, they were Harvard students.
Well, they seemed to have some kind of energy thing that let them use different powers.
Yeah, that was really weird. Like, I thought it was interesting that, like, one of them shapeshifted, right?
Yeah.
And then another one caught on fire.
He, like, one of them turned into, like, a tornado or something.
Yeah, that was it. And then one of them was just, like, super strong, I think. But, yeah, I had never seen them before this. I don't even know if they appear elsewhere, but they were great.
I love that they're just, like, Harvard brats who decided the best way to study sociology was to go back to the mean streets of their youth and become... a fucking terrible hooligan gang. Yeah. It's just... the whole premise for them is ridiculous. And the fact that they pull it off in terms of dialogue so well is just... they were wonderful. And I don't think they contributed to the story a whole lot so much as providing, like, a proving grounds for this team. And proving it not just to the gang, but... by proxy, proving it to the community, like, hey, community, this is a group of hooligans you really fucking hated for a long time, so we're going to get rid of them for you. And the community going, okay, yeah, those guys were kind of douchey. Fine, you're okay for now. Like, other than that literal proving ground kind of a thing, I don't think they, like, had any function in the story, but they were just fucking entertaining.
It was, I don't know, it's just a really nice juxtaposition where you see... people so well-spoken, and then they're, like, shaking down 90-year-old women for their groceries. Like, what even is going on? That's not a thing that people do.
No.
Well, it was a cool, I thought it was kind of a neat change of pace. You don't ever see villains like that, you know? I mean, it's just, I thought it was particularly creative because I'd never seen anything like that, you know? And it was very funny, and I think it worked pretty well.
They were enjoyable, definitely.
Well, like you said, it's nothing you see very often. More often than not, you see villains like Monger Khan or Roulette, and you don't... It's neat that they give you the perspective of the community and then make this team matter for that community. Like, really, I would not want a superhero team with their headquarters around the corner, because headquarters tend to get blown up, as do the buildings right next to them. In terms of living there, fuck no, I do not want a team moving next, like, down the block from me. But at the same time, because you don't ever see them fight these street-level villains, it's kind of neat to see them interact on the just straight clean-up-the-community level.
And that is their thing, too. I mean, their whole means of differentiation from the other teams is that they're actually accessible. You don't have to go through all manner of loopholes just to talk to some operator at, like, the JLA tower, right? You can call these guys on their hotline and have them solve your problems. On the other hand, if they're that close to the community, it's like, you know, when aliens attack, you're kind of boned.
Yeah, your streets get taken over by giant fucking robots.
But it's funny, like, the neighborhood turned it into a party, and they were all hanging out, watching what was happening.
Oh yeah, that's right. They set up like a grill and shit.
The JLA were saying, "Should we disperse the crowd?" So that was pretty funny.
Yeah, and Wonder Woman got like really judgy about it too.
Yeah, I think she's very judgy throughout this whole thing.
She was not a nice lady in this comic.
Mm-mm.
So, who was your guys? No, who was your guys' favorite character in this? Do you have a favorite?
It's always Booster Gold.
Yeah, it is.
I really love the fact that he married some like decrepit old woman. I can't get over that. It's so funny, and I want to see that like marriage resolved. I want to see how that divorce goes down, because you know it will, or she's just gonna die. And like,
I do believe this comes up next week.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think it's. I think it's resolved to some degree.
I really
it definitely
want to
doesn't.
See
it. It doesn't go away. That's for sure.
Oh really? No.
Well, I mean, in the next comic.
I want to see Booster try to weasel his way out of this. I think that will be, like, incredibly amusing.
Yeah, I got, of course, Booster Gold forever and always, but I really love Mary Marvel. I love the Marvels so much, and Mary, I think, is my favorite. Just because she's even more sugar-coated than Billy, because Billy at least has gone out and been on a couple teams, and he's sort of more... He's less sheltered than Mary is. Mary is like the most sheltered member of that family. And to see her get out to not just any group, but this group. It's genius. It's just genius. What about you, David? You have a heart condition, or can you answer the question?
It's hard for me to pick. I mean, the obvious answer for me would be like to pick Blue Beetle, but this comic is just, I love them all. I like Sue is particularly funny in this, and I'm having trouble actually separating this from the one we read next.
Yeah,
because to me they're like one big comic, but I don't know, the writers of this comic do such a good job of putting them together and making them interact in a way that's so entertaining. It's hard for me to pick just one character. So I'm going to cop out and not answer that question.
All right. Well, we'll move on to the art then and talk about favorite moments and stuff. I mean, there's not much more, I think, that we could say about the art.
Yeah, it's the same team that we read last week.
It's the same team. And I mean, if anything, it got better. I don't know if it was because comic book creation technology got better, in that you can have deeper colors and better contrast, and I don't know if that's what makes this feel so much better than last time, but it's the same style, but it's 20 years more experienced and 20 years better. Right? I mean, was there any regression in here anywhere, or is this all just the same? Oh my god, this is beautiful.
You know, there was that same mastery of faces. Like, the facial expressions were
Kevin Maguire is a master of that. There's no other way to put it. Well done, Jen.
Well, I think if anything, yeah. I want to say it got better, because in the 80s one, there was great mastery of facial expression, but maybe the body work and the acting needed to be improved. Like, you mentioned, David, last time, there was that one scene where Hal Jordan's, like, walking out of a room, kind of throwing his hands up. It looks like he's doing, like, a ballerina pirouette. Like, those mistakes don't happen in this. And instead, his body language and acting almost tends to become a strength. Like, we get these kind of facial expressions with Ralph sitting on the couch, you know, when Elrond's convincing them to join.
Mm-hmm.
Except his shoulders raise and slump and adjust, and his weight shifts, and the body language feels just as natural as the facial work does. And I think what once used to be one of the problems with Maguire's work is now another one of the strengths.
Well, one thing I notice in this one, and it probably was there in what we read last week, but it's something that stands out in Maguire's work that I don't really notice so much in when I read comics on a regular basis, but the facial expressions and the body language perfectly convey the tone. And it's not always easy to get the tone when you read comics. I mean, usually the comic itself has an overall tone. Like, if you're reading Batman, Batman has a certain tone about him. Unless it's obviously a funny comic or a obviously funny moment. But in here, you know, they go through, it's generally funny, but the tone of the characters is, like, all over the place, and you can see it in their face and in their body language, and they don't really have too much. I think a lot of the time the letterer will take up the slack in helping to convey tone, and we get that a little bit in here. There's some italics and a little bit of bold lettering mm-hmm. when there's yelling, but I don't think I think that just helps communicate the emotions even more than the facial expressions and body language do. Like, there's pages where there's, like, you know, 9 to 12 panels on it, and it's this whole roller coaster of emotions that the different characters go through. And it's just, I don't know, it just, it all the pieces fit together so well in this comic. And I think it has to do a lot with, I mean, it's definitely the creative team doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are excellent teams like Frank Quietly and Grant Morrison, and, you know, maybe this isn't a better comic than All-Star Superman in the grand scheme of things, but these creators work so well together that you get a comic like this that it's hard to find fault, you know?
Yep. So, did any of you guys have a favorite moment that we haven't mentioned yet? I'll say. When they're standing around and Elrond keeps referring to J-Lo as a she, and it's a stupid joke, but when they say, how do you know it's a she? How can you even tell? And Elrond says, let me just put it this way. Hubba hubba. That made me laugh so hard the first time I read this, and it made me laugh again. Because how could you tell? How could you? But he can tell. Oh, can he tell?
I liked the interaction between Ralph and Plastic Man. That was pretty funny.
Oh, yeah.
Because Plastic Man's like, he keeps having to tell himself that he's a better hero than Ralph Dibny.
Yeah. He needs to be a fire hydrant.
Yeah, that makes you obviously the better hero. You can turn into more things. Way to go.
As we've gone, I know at the beginning of this, beginning of our run as podcasters, I bash Plastic Man a lot, but he's starting to grow on me.
I can see all of the reasons still why you hated him and why you think he's terrible, and all those reasons hold true, but I don't know, he does just kind of grow on you. There's no other way to put it. Yeah, let's get down and rate this one. How about you go first, David?
Well, I don't think I could not give this a 5, because I think I gave last week a 5, and I like this comic better than the actual JLI run. I think, like we talked about a little bit earlier, this comic brings together the best parts of the original JLI run, and then I think kind of because the creators have improved and are a little bit have a bit more experience under their belts, the comic, you can tell it's more polished. And I think what's great about this one too is that it doesn't have the maybe it doesn't have as much, I'm not really sure what the word is, like overhead from DC editorial that the original JLI run had, because you know this is a standalone comic along with the one we're going to read next week, so it doesn't have to carry on the Justice League name in the same way that the JLI run did before. So I think, like I said, this brings together the best parts of the original and just turns it up to 11. So it's easily a 5 for me. This is one of my favorite comics. So
cool. How about you, Jen?
So I feel like this actually was a comic, like as you said, it was a reunion comic, and it was meant to appeal more to people who had read more of the original run. So I had a little trouble getting into it. I felt like the first maybe 2.5 issues were really slow to go through just because I was still kind of learning who people were and wondering why the people who I did know were no longer part of the team, that sort of thing. So I did really enjoy this, and I thought that, you know, the art was spectacular and the writing was funny, but it felt slower for me, so I can't give this one a 5. I'm actually going to go with a 4 this week, because I did enjoy it, and I felt like it really picked up near the end, and the end had a good, funny twist, and it just felt very, like, by the end, what this team should be. This comic had a good tone for the team, but I don't know if I had enough background to really get all of it. So a 4.
Okay. I mean, I completely agree with both of you in a weird way. I'm right there with Jen in that there's a lot of reunioning stuff in this, and it's like, if you don't know who they are, it's got to be really, really hard to jump in and enjoy it. Like, if you don't know who Fire is, there's not a whole lot of introduction on her character. There's a lot of this that there's not a lot of introduction for. But if you're like me, and you're like David, and you know kind of who these people are, it does not get better than this. So I'm going to go with David and also give this a 5. Next week we're going to continue on with our roll of 5-star ratings. We're going to read I Can't Believe It's Not the Justice League by the same team, the same artist, the same writers, the same inker. It's going to be great, but it's the same story, and we've been enjoying it, so I'm pretty sure you're going to enjoy it too, and we'll see how the story changes with this group. That's next week. If you want to know what's happened in our last 150 episodes, go to www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. On the right, hit past shows, and it'll show you everything we had all the way before this. And if you know what? If there's something we're missing, if there's something we haven't read, send us an email and let us know at
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
Also, follow us on all the social media stuff. Facebook.com/APSupercast, Twitter.com/APSupercast, and APSupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah! All right, everybody. Until next week. Goodbye!
Bye!